All right. Hello, everyone. This is the CircuitPython weekly meeting for January 5th, 2026. My name is Scott, and this is the time of the week we get together to talk about all things CircuitPython. I'm sponsored by Adafruit to work on CircuitPython. If you don't know, CircuitPython is a version of Python designed to run on tiny computers called microcontrollers. Again, CircuitPython development is primarily sponsored by Adafruit. So, if you want to support Adafruit and CircuitPython, consider purchasing hardware at adafruit.com. This meeting is hosted on the Adafruit Discord server. You can join anytime by going to the URL adafru.it/discord. We hold the meeting in the CircuitPython dev text channel and the CircuitPython voice channel. You need to be CircuitPythonista to be able to speak. This meeting typically happens Mondays at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, except when it coincides with a U.S. holiday. In the notes doc, there's a link to a calendar you can view online and add to your favorite calendar app. We also send notifications about upcoming meetings via Discord. If you'd like to receive those notifications, ask us to add you to the CircuitPythonista's Discord role. And I think folks should check the calendar. I think there might be a pending PR to add the 2026 dates, but we should double check that. There is a shared notes document that accompanies the meeting and recording. You can contribute to this document beforehand. The final notes document includes timestamps to go along with the video, so you can use the doc to skip around and view the parts of the video you interest you most. The meeting tends to run 30 to 60 minutes. After each meeting, we post a link to the next meeting's notes document in the CircuitPython dev channel on the Adafruit Discord. Check the pinned messages to find the latest one, and you could add your notes for the following meeting there. If you wish to participate but cannot attend, you can still leave hug reports and status updates in the document for us to read during the meeting. Okay, the meeting is held in five parts. The first is community news. This is a look at things, all things CircuitPython and Python on hardware in the community. It's a chosen set of items from our Python and Microcontrollers newsletter. The second part is state of CircuitPython libraries in Blinka. This is a quantitative overview of the entire project. It's a chance to look at the project by the numbers, separate from our status updates. The third part is hug reports. Hug reports is an opportunity to highlight the good things folks are doing, taking the time to recognize the awesome folks in our community. Fourth part is status updates. It's an opportunity to report on what we've been up to. Take a couple of minutes and talk about what you've been doing in the last week and what you plan on doing in the coming week. And lastly, we have the fifth part, which is in the weeds. It's an opportunity for more long-form discussions. They can come out of status updates or more often be identified ahead of time as too long for status updates. Folks add entries in the notes doc and we go through them at the end. And with that, let's start with community news. But first, I will take a timestamp and go to community news. So this is normally a select number of items from the CircuitPython or the Python for Microcontrollers newsletter that Anne puts together. But that newsletter resumes next week. So I just added one item here that I posted to our blog, which is CircuitPython 2026. This is a. We take the start of every year to kind of look at CircuitPython kind of as a broader thing. So I should just read what I wrote. Happy New Year, everyone. CircuitPython turns 9 years old next week. I dug up the first beta post, I think, which is when we kind of announced the CircuitPython name. So I kind of consider that when CircuitPython itself was born. Once again, we're thinking about the next year of CircuitPython's growth. We'd like to hear from you how we can improve CircuitPython this year. What would you like CircuitPython to do that it can't? What chipset would you like to run it on? What tools are missing or need improving? What documentation is missing or needs work? How would you like to program and debug CircuitPython? Just like past years, and there's links to the last 7 years of doing this, we'd like folks in the CircuitPython community to share their thoughts about CircuitPython's future. So please post about #CircuitPython2026 to some public place on the internet by Wednesday, January 21st, 2026, and then let us know. When you post, please add #CircuitPython2026 and email CircuitPython2026@adafruit.com with a link. That email address goes to me and Phil, and then I will post it on the Adafruit blog so that other we kind of collate everything together so that we can all read what comes in. All right, And still a reminder about the newsletter. It's the Python on Microcontrollers weekly newsletter. It's a CircuitPython community-run newsletter emailed every Monday. The complete archives are available at adafruitdaily.com/category/CircuitPython, I believe is what it is. It highlights the latest Python and hardware-related news from around the web, including CircuitPython, Python, and MicroPython developments. To contribute your own news or project, email cpnews@adafruit.com. We appreciate everything, and the next one's going to be a big one because I know Anne and folks have been collecting lots of the good stuff over the holidays. All right, next up, section-wise, we have the state of CircuitPython libraries and Blinka. Usually this covers the previous week, but I did go back and look at we haven't had a meeting for 2 weeks, and so I did at least gather everything into the overall section. So the overall section here is for the last 2 weeks, whereas the subsections after that will be only for the previous week, because I didn't want to have to add those all together. So overall, we had 7 pull requests merged from 6 different authors: DCD, Foamy Guy, Retired Wizard, Nokiman, DMLB 2000, and Timeline 8. Timeline 8 was the previous week. And then 5 reviewers: Dan, myself, Ann, Melissa, and Tim, Foamy Guy. And then from the 1229 report, we had 6 closed issues by 5 people, 7 opened by 7 people. So we were net up 1. But then in the previous week, we had 8 closed issues by 7 people and 5 opened by 6. So we're actually down 1 over the last 2 weeks. And now for the core, in just the previous week, we had 2 pull requests merged from DCD and Nokiman, so thank you to them. We had 22 open pull requests, so we're comfortably under our 25 goal, which is like the single page. Issues-wise in the core, we had 6 closed issues by 6 people and 1 opened by 1 person, so we went down 5 issues, which is great, for a total of 843 open issues. We use milestones to track prioritization for Adafruit-funded work, and we have kind of our highest priority bucket right now is the 10.1 bucket, which is 5 open issues, and we should actually take a look at that and figure out if we can get 10.1 out the door too. We have 0 issues not assigned to milestones, so we are keeping up with that in case anything urgent comes in. Next up, let's ask Tim to read the library stats.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. This section covers all the CircuitPython libraries, which are organized on GitHub under a couple of different bundles. We have the Adafruit Library Bundle, which currently has 380 libraries in it, and the Community Library Bundle with libraries submitted by third parties and members of the community. There's 172 libraries in that one for a total of 552 libraries right now that support CircuitPython. Over the past week, there were 2 pull requests merged by 2 authors, Retired Wizard and myself. There were 3 reviewers, Scott and Anne, as well as myself. Of the pull requests that were merged, it was oldest one was 9 days and the newest one was 1 day, so both on the newer side of things. That leaves us right now with 45 pull requests open across the Adafruit Bundle libraries. The oldest one of those is getting up there, 1,236 days. The newest one is 13 days old. I had a bit of a break over the holidays in action there. And then issues-wise, we have two issues closed by 1 person and 4 new issues opened up by 4 people. And that leaves us right now with 771 open issues. And there is one of them currently that's labeled as a good first issue. And you can find those all listed at circuitpython.org/contributing, which is the website where you should head if you would like to get involved in the CircuitPython project. Again, that's circuitpython.org/contributing. When you first open that page, you're going to see a list of open PRs. These are links over to GitHub. They're waiting for a person to come and review a proposed change. And that is the first place where we tend to point folks who want to get involved in the project and have no prior experience. So you can scroll through that list and find something that's interesting to you or that you've got the hardware for, click through to GitHub, read about what the proposed change was, and then you can test out that code. If you do have the hardware, you can test it on your CircuitPython device. Even if you don't have the hardware, you can review the code right there in the GitHub webpage, and you can leave a comment. Let us know what you found when you looked it over. Things like spelling, syntax, logic, anything like that is fair game for you to review the code and leave comments about. If you do have the hardware, let us know in your comment if you were able to test it out, how it went, if it worked, if it didn't, if you had any issues, what versions of CircuitPython you use for testing, all that good stuff. If you do that a couple times, would like to get leveled up to leave official reviews on the team that we have over on GitHub, we can work with you to do that. If you would like to start submitting some of your own code, you can do that as well from the same page, circuitpython.org/contributing. If you click over to the issues link along the top of the page, there's some navigation. You click over to issues, you see a similar looking list of links over to GitHub, but these ones don't have a proposed change yet. They're waiting for a person to come along who's interested in submitting that change to resolve the issue. It could be fixing a bug or adding a new feature or a new example or enhancement or something like that. And so again, if you are looking to get involved, get your hands dirty writing some code, you can click through onto one of those over to GitHub, read about what the issue is, and then submit a PR with a solution to that issue. We do have a learn guide for contributing to CircuitPython using Git and GitHub. And we also have folks who are around throughout the week who are happy to help you out. So if you are trying to contribute, whether that is reviewing PRs or submitting some of your own, you're having trouble with any part of the process, version control or GitHub or actions or anything like that, come say hi in the Discord. Let us know what you're up to, and we would be happy to help out. And then I will leave you with library updates over in the community bundle. In the last 7 days, there have been updates to USB host gamepad library and the Piper Blockly library. And that's what we've got for libraries. Thanks.
Thank you, Foamy Guy. Next up, I will read the state of Blinka. So Blinka is our compatibility layer. So this is Python code that interfaces with either an underlying Linux system or MicroPython system to present the CircuitPython API on CPython or MicroPython. So we had two pull requests merged from one different author, DMLB2000, reviewed by Maker Melissa. 17 open pull requests. There's five Pi5 NeoPixel pull requests all opened on the same day, 70 days ago. So maybe those need to be looked at. Issues-wise, no closed issues, no opened issues. So net even for 143 open issues across Blinka repositories. And Blinka currently supports 166 different boards. And next up, let's go to Hug Reports. So Hug Reports is a chance to say thank you to folks for the awesome work they're doing within our community. It's great to recognize folks, and it's also good to reinforce what we value as a community. So first up, I will start, and then we'll go down the list of folks listed in the notes doc. If they're marked as text only, I'll read them. Otherwise, I will hand it over to that person to read off their notes. And we'll do status updates in the same way in just a bit. But first, I have two hugs, one for Rybek, who was the first to respond to my CircuitPython 2026 post. Thanks for emailing me with that. And then also I want to have a hug for help with HyperWhisper, which is a package that pieces together speech to text and putting it into your window, whatever window you have open. So Linux integration for speech to text, playing with that as a way of not typing everything. All right, and next up, let's go to Dan.
Okay, thanks. So first of all, shout out to Professor John Gallagher at Boston College, who teaches CircuitPython as part of a course that he teaches about introductory physical computing. You really should take a look at that material if you either want more background on CircuitPython or if you want to give somebody a reference for learning about CircuitPython. You can go to gallagher.com. The link is in the notes. And he has two things of great interest. There's a YouTube channel with a lot of material that gets updated frequently. And then also there's a pointer there to a Google Drive for the course that he teaches. The course number, it listed currently in the note, but take a look at the Google Drive because it has a ton of material in it that sort of both introduces you to physical computing and also to Python and CircuitPython. I'm thinking maybe I should make a playground note about this so that people can point to it easily. Next, thanks to Bablock B, who found a significant performance degradation when SD cards are used in CircuitPython 10 and they are exposed to the host. So we have to investigate that. And Bablock B did a good job also. Thanks for testing it rather thoroughly with a benchmark set of benchmarking programs. And thanks to Scott for a good discussion last Friday about a bunch of things having to do with Wi-Fi implementation with NINAFW and related topics. And that's it.
Thank you, Dan. Let's go to Foamy Guy next.
All right, thanks, Scott. I have hug reports for group hug, first of all. Thanks for another fun year working on CircuitPython stuff. It's been a good one, and I'm looking forward to next year as well. A hug for Retired Wizard and Relic SE for submitting new features and improvements and fixes in FruitJam OS over the break, and also a hug for DCD for submitting some issues in the FruitJam library. Thanks.
Thank you, Foamy Guy. Okay, next up, I have notes from Retired Wizard, who says, group hug, thanks to the Adafruit folks and community contributors for making such a fun and welcoming project. Thank you to Anne for her Fruit Jam port of a Pac-Man clone she built based on the Scaroland PacWio CircuitPython project. And hugs to Relic SE for providing lots of suggestions and code updates to the PacJam program. And next up, we have hugs from Relic SE. Cooper, I see you're unmuted, but I do not hear you. All right. Relic SE, aka Cooper, says a hug to Retired Wizard and Foamy Guy for help on the review of the FruitJam OS screensavers application updates. A hug to Retired Wizard for a thorough review of PacJam updates and Sam Blenny for fixing harmonic distortion issues on the TLV320. And that's it for hug reports. Thank you, everybody. Next up, we have status updates. Status updates. Is similarly done where we do it kind of as a round robin. I'll start and go through the list again. This time we're going to talk about what we've been working on the past week and what we plan on working on in the coming week. Since we're just coming out of the holidays, it'll likely be more about the future than the past. Okay, for me, I was out until last Friday, so I got caught up on emails. Last Friday, I launched CircuitPython 2026, which we've talked about as well. Wrap up will be on the 21st. We have a meeting on the 20th. The 19th is a US holiday, so the 21st is a Tuesday, or 20th is a Tuesday, 21st is a Wednesday, and that's kind of how we do it. We do a last call in this meeting in 2 weeks. So I'm excited to hear what everybody's thinking about for CircuitPython this year. My goal is to wrap up CircuitPython or I2S support in the Zephyr port. I've been waiting to get to Bluetooth Low Energy, BLE, in the Zephyr port until I had more time, and now it's January and I have that time. So I'm excited to dig into Bluetooth support in Zephyr and I2S, wrap up I2S as well. So the last thing to note is that I will be deep diving on Friday. So that's the live stream that I haven't done in 6 months because of being out with my youngest child. So I should say thanks to Tim Foamy Guy for filling in for me as always. And I'm excited to deep dive on Friday. Yeah. Okay, let's hear status updates from Dan.
Okay, so I've been working over the holidays. I've been working more on debugging the native C client that talks to Airlift. That is the Nina FW hardware, and it's fetching HTTP. It's doing HTTP requests right now, not HTTPS. We'd like to actually also use this possibly for Wi-Fi workflow. And there were some stumbling blocks about that. I talked to Scott about that last week, and we got over those stumbling blocks having to do with storage allocation. I thought that it had to use the heap, and in fact, by carefully doing SPI transfers kind of partially, you can avoid doing storage allocation. So I'm cleaning up the code to take to do that. And then after I finish that, I'm going to get Wi-Fi working on the ESP32P4 EV board. That's the Espressif evaluation board. Scott had turned it on, but it hadn't worked and didn't have time to get it to work. So I'll probably work on that, given that I've already been spending a lot of time on Wi-Fi recently. So it's kind of in my head. And then finally, after that, maybe I'll start working on circuit matter again, especially looking at adding some C implementations for some of the cryptography stuff that's now done in Python too slowly in circuit matter. So we'll see about that. Okay, that's it.
Thanks, Dan. All right, let's hear from Foamy Guy.
Right. I have been reviewing and testing out some Fruit Jam OS PRs that were submitted over the break. I, for Christmas, got a USB MIDI controller, so I've been playing with USB MIDI and SynthIO a lot. I did not have a lot of prior experience with either, but I have been messing around quite a bit. I did find an issue and submitted it to the MIDI library, mostly with control. Is it control commands or the knob turns? I forget the control change, I think, and pitch bend. The controller I have, it sends a bunch of them at once. And they get kind of stuck in the buffer and don't get handled until more stuff comes in. So I have a couple ideas on how to fix that. And I will try to submit PR for that this week. And then along the same lines, but over in CPython world, I have also been playing a lot with this PyO, or perhaps PO. I'm not sure how it's pronounced, PYO, which is a CPython library for audio synthesis and manipulation. Sort of like SynthIO in some ways. You can generate sounds and you can add filters and distortions and all that fun stuff and feed from the output of one into the other. So it's kind of like a virtual plug board inside of a Python program for sound, which has been super fun to play with as well and given me ideas for perhaps things we could add to SynthIO in the future.
Nice.
And that's what I've been up to. Thanks.
Neat. I've always wanted to make a way to fake plugging stuff in, like Eurorack, but not Eurorack, where it's just like you have the user interactions of Eurorack without actually having to like pipe audio through.
Yeah, would be super cool for sure.
So it's like taking the virtual plug board and making a physical plug board to mimic it or something. Anyway, cool. Thanks, Foamy Guy. And last up, I will read just a little tidbit from Retired Wizard, who wants to say, I'll be offline most of this week. They are wandering the CES show floors, which sounds cool. Okay, that's it for status updates. Thank you, everybody. Last up, we have In the Weeds. This is a chance for us to have any longer form discussions. And we have one item here from Relic SE, who says, what are your thoughts on the Fruit Jam OS launcher config file? Save location, CircuitPy, CP saves, or the SD card? And there's a link to a pull request there. I believe I have it open in a tab, but I have not looked at it yet. So, anybody have context for this?
Yeah, I can speak to it a little bit. So it basically boils down to, so launcherconf.json is a config file that some of the Fruit Jam OS apps look at. It started as just the launcher, which is where the name came from, although we do have a couple of other things like screensavers and stuff that reference it now as well. It allows you to do some high-level settings like enable or disable the mouse, configure the screensaver, configure the screen size, a couple other things. It's sort of like settings.toml in some ways, but it's specific to FruitJam OS stuff, not the CircuitPython core necessarily. Mm-hmm. And we went with JSON so that we could have nested objects and things like that instead of TOML. And the PR that's there is adding some capabilities to screensaver configurations. And the crux of, I think, the question here is about the launcher config and where it gets stored and how it gets sort of compiled together. So right now, we have a copy of the file that can live in the root of CircuitPy. You can just edit it with your editor, just like you would CodePy or anything else. Mm-hmm. So you can put your configurations in there, you save them, and then the launcher and the other apps will check that file and read values out of them to you know, decide how to behave. We also have it set up to where you can make changes to the same file, launcher.conf, but inside of the cpsaved drive. So in CircuitPython, it would see it as like /save/launcherconfig or launcherconf.json. Mm-hmm. You can make those changes in the built-in editor without switching to writable flash mode, which is nice. So you can, it allows you to be able to modify some of those settings without A, having to have it plugged into a PC, or B, having to switch over to writable mode. Mm-hmm. And then at one point we also added, I believe, the ability to have this on the SD card. And if I recall right, I think the idea in mind for the SD card one was somebody had mentioned when they install a new version of FruitJam OS, they either reformat the drive with erase storage or otherwise just delete the stuff on there. I don't recall for sure the specifics. Mm-hmm. But they wanted a way to have the config file live on the SD card as well, so that after flashing sort of a new version of FruitJam OS, they could kind of re-import all of their same configs. Mm-hmm. And I think the tricky bit is figuring out how to best compile those three different sources together to have like one truth of what is the current config and which ones should get overwritten in which situations, if any, and that kind of stuff. So I do think that's the larger discussion in the context. I don't have right now off the top of my head, though, a full answer. I need to A, read through the thread some more and make sure I'm understanding everything, and then B, think through the usages of launcher that exist inside of the existing apps and think about like what the ramifications are of overriding which ones when and that sort of stuff. So I don't have like a conclusion necessarily, but right. That is the larger context for the discussion, I think.
Thanks for that background. Like I can follow up on the issue too, or the PR, but generally it sounds like it makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think we're close. I think it's just dealing with any trickiness and trying to make sure we don't overwrite the user's intention, basically. That's, or at least from my perspective, that's my goal, is like, I would like these places to exist. They each kind of have a reason for existing.
Right.
But I do want to make sure that it's not super easy for the user to like accidentally override their own intention. If they write it in one place and then we override it back to blank or something, I don't want to do that.
Right.
So that I think is the tricky bit.
A couple design things that come to me. One, you could change the name of the file in different locations to make it clear like what the use of each one is.
That's true. Yeah.
And then you could also error if there's ever a setting that exists in two places and it's different.
Yes.
So you could like enforce the idea that like they should, even if you have multiple, you should make sure they're exclusive to each other. So like the key for every key, like it should only exist in one place unless like the values are the same or something. Like,
yeah.
Just to like kind of force the differentiation of the different locations. And then renaming them different things could help with that too.
Retired Wizard adds here, the problem is that at various times, an app can't necessarily update all locations, so they could be out of sync. Right, yeah. So, and I guess a little bit more that I don't think I mentioned into the context is having, so right now, these are just text files. You can edit them with the editor or on the PC. But we do have this idea in mind of these things being pulled forth in the UI somewhere. So either having a settings app that allows you to change all of the built-in settings, or maybe having it split up where like audio apps have an audio settings that has the things for it, and so on and so forth. And so in that scenario where we get to the point where we can save changes, which is what this screensaver PR does, it starts to add some of that ability where there's actually a UI for the user to interact with and they can save. And yeah, to Retired Wizard's points, we can't, from the code itself, we can't necessarily update all the places easily, especially, well, there may not be an SD card, but especially CircuitPy drive, it will not be writable unless we switch the drive and reboot and all that stuff, which I don't think we want to do. So yeah,
Well,
we need
I think
to.
like that's why you could call, yeah, so the mutual exclusive thing is not helpful. But I think maybe
I think
calling them
there's.
different things could make it clearer. So like CircuitPy is like your defaults, and then like CP Saves has your like user settings, and they take priority over the defaults. That sort of thing.
Yeah, I think there will be a way to prioritize them when they get compiled together, or else at least some way to import it and make sure that the intent comes through. Yeah, so I do need to think through it a bit more, but I think it will be possible to land in a good place where it's possible to update the settings either from the file or from a built-in settings thing, and we can have it where it's not going to be overriding, or they will stay out of sync, but there will be some logic in the code that handles it that knows how to
Merge them together.
rectify if they are out of sync.
Yeah, I'm also thinking of like UDEV rules where you have like a number in the file name is something you could do, or
Oh yeah, that'd be cool.
like you could do it
Yeah, give
within
them.
it, if you don't expect people to hand edit it, you could actually like put a version number next to settings in the config. But like that's kind of a pain. So that like the setting with the highest number wins. I don't know. I would just kind of say like CircuitPy is default values. CP saves is values on top of that.
Modified add-on. Yeah.
But yeah, like I think you kind of, and maybe if you want the mix of like people edit the file directly versus like they use the app, is that you just need two different settings files.
Yeah, that could work actually. I had not considered just making a second one, but that may be the way to go. And it may be the case that we don't need to keep editing the file. I will say I like, personally at least, I like editing the file because I can do it quicker and easier, and I can format and control F and find and do all the stuff I'm used to doing in my IDE. But it, you know, if I'm the only one who wants the file editing capabilities, I'm okay with doing it differently as well. And at the end of the day, it is also still by a JSON, and I can edit it and deal with the consequences myself if I choose to do it that way. It's not officially supported or something, so that's an option as well. If we get around to having a front end and it makes a lot more sense to point people to using the front end, and we just want to sort of drop support essentially for the file being edited outside, we could do that as well if I'm the only one that uses it.
This just reminds me of the world of like Linux dot files, like people who manage
Yeah.
their dot files a lot. And like I'm not one of those people, so I can't really, I don't have that experience, but like that would be another place to look for inspiration.
Yeah.
It's like how do people
Okay.
do dot file management? Like anytime my editor kicks me to a JSON file, I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like I don't know what the keys could be, right? Like
Yep.
I find it kind of impossible to reason about. Yeah, I'll read through the PR too, but hopefully that gives you some more ideas. Awesome. Thank you so much. All right, let's wrap this thing up. So this has been the CircuitPython meeting for January 5th, 2026. Thank you everybody who participated. If you want to support Adafruit and CircuitPython, then those of us that work on CircuitPython, consider purchasing from the Adafruit shop at adafruit.com. Purchasing from resellers is great too, such as DigiKey. The video of this meeting will be released on YouTube at youtube.com/Adafruit, and the podcast will be available on major podcast services. The podcast is just the audio of the video. It will also be featured in next week's Python for Microcontrollers newsletter. Visit adafruitdaily.com to subscribe to that. The next meeting will be held next Monday as usual at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. But the meeting after that, so 2 weeks from now, will be delayed a day for, if I remember right, that's what it is. I'm looking at the wrong month. Yeah, so 2 weeks from now, it will be delayed by a day. And it does look like the CircuitPython meeting calendar does have that as well. This meeting is held on the Adafruit Discord, which you can join anytime by going to the URL adafru.it/discord. To be notified about the meeting and any changes to the time or day, you can ask to be added to the CircuitPythonista's role on Discord. With that, we hope to see you all next week. Happy 2026 again. Thanks everybody for coming, and I'm excited for the coming year and to hear about your CircuitPython 2026s. Have a good one.